From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Lindsay Brolini with the latest. The winter weather made for slippery conditions on Juneau's roads this weekend. As KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, police responded to a fair number of accidents as well.
The Juneau Police Department responded to 10 car crashes between Saturday and Sunday. JPD Public Safety Manager Aaron Calwara says 9 of those accidents involved just a single car.
5 of them were vehicles that went in ditches or got high-centered on a snow berm, something like that.
Calwara says most of the accidents were weather-related or because someone was driving too fast for conditions. One person died in an early Saturday rollover crash, but it's not clear what caused that accident. Calwara says the number of incidents over the weekend is pretty typical for one with alternating snow and rain.
Most of the accidents that were reported to us were in the valley. A couple were out the road. Several were in the area of the McNugget intersection, and quite a few on Egan Drive.
Most importantly, she says people just need to slow down and put space between themselves and other vehicles. Sam Dapsevich with the Alaska Department of Transportation agrees. DOT maintains most of Juneau's roads, and he says they're facing some uphill battles this year.
Over the last 5 or 6 years, our budget for highways and aviation has been reduced, and so we have fewer staff and less equipment available to respond than we did in years past.
Snow plows are on the roads at 4 in the morning when the winter weather hits. Dapsevich says they're taking steps to try and be more efficient as well, like using a tow plow.
The tow plows can operate quite a bit more efficiently because they take care of multiple lanes in one pass. It has a 26-foot plow, basically, that reaches across the highway and saves time, allows us to free up resources for other routes.
He says drivers should give themselves plenty of time to get where they're going and give snow plows plenty of space on the road. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
The state's annual draw from the permanent fund is a lot of money, more than $3 billion. For some lawmakers, the primary way that money should be used is clear, to pay permanent fund dividends. But some lawmakers say the fund can help settle one of the state's issues that it's been debating even longer than the PFD, how to pay for public education. KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
While state public school funding has been flat the past 5 years, its value has been eroded by rising prices. And some teachers have received pink slips while waiting for the legislature to pass the budget. Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz says the uncertainty is hurting schools.
If you ask any business if unstable revenue will drive performance, they'll tell you no. The same thing is true for public education. Sustainable funding actually helps to drive reform and outcomes and performance.
Sponholz chairs the House Special Committee on Ways and Means. The committee has been considering proposals to balance the state budget in the long term, and the committee has put forward a bill that would resolve the size of both permanent fund dividends and school funding. Under the bill, a quarter of the money the state draws from the permanent fund each year would be paid in dividends. Half the money that doesn't go to dividends would pay for state education funding, and the rest would be used to support all other state services. The bill would increase state funding for schools by roughly $90 million next year. Sponholz says that will help schools dealing with rising costs.
We can start to chip away at the losses that we've experienced in the buying power of our K-12 education dollars over the last few years.
Over the next decade, the permanent fund is projected to grow faster than inflation. That means state education funding would be significantly higher by 2030 than it is today. The proposal drew praise from prominent advocates for public school funding. Tom Claymire leads the state's largest teachers union, the Alaska affiliate of the National Education Association. He says the additional money could address different needs across the state, from reducing class sizes to improving broadband access. He also says that it could increase the state's ability to attract and retain teachers and other school staff.
If we get more highly qualified educators in those positions and reduce that student-to-teacher ratio, the more one-on-one time we're going to get with students and the better the outcomes are going to be.
The bill was introduced in the 4th special session this year. It's not yet clear if the legislature will be considering it or any similar proposal during the regular session that begins in January. It's a different approach than that advocated by most members of the Republican House Minority Caucus, who have emphasized resolving the permanent fund dividend first. Nikiski Republican Representative Ben Carpenter says he wouldn't comment on the specifics of the bill until he's had more time to analyze it. But he credited Sponholz with what he said was a, quote, outside-the-box approach to addressing the state's long-term budget issues. He says he would focus on the PFD before considering other areas, like education.
I believe that Alaskans, the majority of them, still feel that the people, through the dividend, should have first call on the permanent fund earnings.
The regular session is scheduled to begin on January 18th in Juneau. In Anchorage, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Haynes Sheldon Museum is showcasing a display of newly revealed Tlingit Formlion images. The museum staff used an infrared camera to photograph traditional bentwood boxes to reveal paintings, not seen in perhaps 200 years. KHNS's Corinne Smith reports.
Several traditional Tlingit bentwood boxes make up part of the Haynes Sheldon Museum's 23,000-item collection. Handmade out of cedar wood and painted, the boxes were used for storage or traded goods, according to Museum Collections Coordinator Zachary James.
These ones, I think, were probably used for regalia because they have really nice paintings on them, but they were general-purpose storage boxes, too.
James is Tlingit, with ancestry in Wrangell and the Stikine Basin, as well as the Chilkat Valley. And he has an active interest in Tlingit art and heritage, especially new ways of looking at pieces from the museum's collection.
It just basically looks like a black surface on wood, and then these kind of amazing images are able to be pulled out of it.
Traditional bentwood boxes come in various sizes. Large boxes stored blankets, clothing, and ceremonial items. Medium-sized boxes stored food, and small boxes held berries, sewing materials, and special treasures. Over time, the outside varnish darkened, probably from soot or grime and storage conditions, obscuring the original paintings. Some were completely hidden, others you can see a faint outline.
And if you look at it from the side, you can kind of see, under certain light conditions, you can kind of see that there is a design, but you can't really make it out very clearly.
Using an infrared lens on a digital camera, James photographed the bentwood boxes, which date back to the 1800s, capturing the striking formline images below.
The way it works is infrared light penetrates through the patina or the varnish, the yellowed varnish on the outside of the piece, and then normal light reflects off of the very outside. The infrared light penetrates through the varnish and then bounces off the pigment or off of the wood and then reflects back. And so it has the ability to see through the kind of grime on the outside.
For James, it was an exciting reveal.
It's probably the first time in a couple hundred years that these designs and these pieces of art have even been able to be appreciated or looked at. So I felt like it was good to see it again.
Haynes Sheldon Museum Board President Colleen Adams says James' initiative and the project is valuable for the Haynes community.
It's such a treasure to have these in Haynes. And for Zach to come up with this idea to bring this artwork to life, to show people what has been underneath that for hundreds of years, it's amazing. So we are very fortunate to be able to witness this.
James says the newly revealed designs are significant to the larger project of recovering and protecting the Tlingit heritage of the Chilkat Valley in Southeast Alaska.
Constantly, Native art has been taken out of Native hands and put in, European or American institutions. I mean, there's Tlingit art from this valley in Russia and in Germany, and all over, University of Pennsylvania. We have no idea what's in private hands, what was lost over the years. So every scrap of information about the Tlingit art forms that we can draw from is important.
Formline involves a complex and often subtle language of rules and motifs, and so James says the recovered images are important for local Tlingit artists to study the art form. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
That's it from the KTOO Newsroom. I'm Lindsay Brolini. To find other state and local stories, visit ktoo.org.